So then I would like to call.
All right.
Are we? What about? Is it like? Is there anyone like Joanna or anyone like representing the CD's office? That
they don't tell me who's going to be here.
But there wasn't someone milling about on the other side.
I went through that. I can go back. Or hey, anybody?
Yeah. All right. Cool. So I would like to call to order our September 5th meeting of the Health, Human Services, and Housing Committee. I would like to begin, before we get to our presentation, I would like to begin with entertaining a motion to approve the August 8th meeting minutes.
Motion.
All right. Moved by Legislator Harmon, second by Legislator Collins. Any discussion on the minutes from August? All right, then I will vote on that. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Before we get into resolutions, we have representatives from our planning department. We have a couple of topics that they're going to cover in their presentation. One is on the ADU Plus One program, and then it just so happens that the first resolution that we have before us tonight is regarding their it also is from the planning department and has some information that is also included in.
We have a presentation.
Yep, so there's a presentation for that. So I think what we're going to do, and Michael, I'm completely changing my mind at the last minute. So what we're going to do is I'm just going to have them do the first presentation, take questions, then do the second presentation, then we'll get into resolutions.
Okay.
Great. Cool. And without any further ado, I will hand it over to Planner Lord Turner.
Thank you. Dennis, do you want to kick us off?
No, go ahead.
Okay. My name is Tyler Farmer, Senior Planner in the Planning Department. For anyone who doesn't know me, I work on all things housing for the county. So I'm going to run through this pretty quickly. Legislator Ustel asked to give a presentation on the Plus One ADU program, which is about to open its second round. So before I jump into the program, hopefully everyone is familiar, but if you are not familiar, ADU stands for Accessory Dwelling Unit. Sometimes they're called accessory apartments, in-law units, granny flats, backyard cottages, lots of different things. They can take many different forms. Roughly, they translate into either attached, meaning it's a part of the home, it's an addition to the home, or it's a conversion of part of the home. So that's an attached ADU or detached ADU, which is this, you know, cottage kind of looking thing back here. So those are kind of the two categories of what they are. I always like to throw this fact up here. In 1950, the average square footage of a single family home, not an ADU, was 983 square feet. 2017, it's 2,571 square feet. The average family size in 1950 was 3.8, and the average family size in 2017 was 2.5. So per square foot, we have less people in homes, and they're a lot bigger. So I like to just point this out, that ADUs, although they're like a newer concept as a housing solution, the size of ADUs, which are anywhere from like 500 to 1,000 square feet, actually the size of homes that we all used to live in the 1950s and before. They also are a lot more environmentally friendly than single family homes as we build them now. So as you can see, kind of energy use, construction material, embedded, you know, emissions with construction materials go up as the size of the home goes up. So extra small home is a 36% savings, and that's 1,100 square feet right there. So there's a lot of benefits for ADUs. You know, we're trying to build more affordable units for the housing supply here. Environmental benefits, you're building on existing footprints of communities. You're not building in new greenfield development, as we call it. It's a supplemental income, especially for fixed income, seniors or retired folks, as well as just supplemental income for anyone with providing extra revenue for a household. And then community benefits as well, increased traffic in neighborhoods. This, because they're usually built in existing neighborhoods, it allows for more pedestrian and bike-friendly neighborhoods, intergenerational housing, you can house a family member or a child, and then it helps prevent displacement of residents if it's done well. So those are all kind of the benefits. About 2 years ago, the state rolled out their plus one ADU, plus we're calling it plus one home, because not everyone knows what an ADU program, ADU is. Program, I think it was $80 million that local municipalities could apply for to provide grants to homeowners. We applied and we got $1.7 million in the first round, which was 14 units total. It's grants of $125,000 per income qualified family or household. We have now granted those 14, and I think one or two are under construction, and we can get into this if we want, but many more are on the way to developing their units as well. So we were pretty successful. We got over 100 applicants in the first round, and so when we applied for round two, the state was supportive of that and gave us $5 million through the second round of the funding, which will develop 40 units across the county. And there will be a round three that we may apply for as well, too. So this is kind of how the program works. You have to be income qualified. So a homeowner has to earn 100% or less of area median income for the county. Sorry, the first line should say one person household. So depending on your household size, there's an income limit. So we're making sure we're providing it to homeowners who really need the extra support. You have to meet all your zoning building setback requirements for your property. It has to be your primary residence. It can't be a second home. There has to be some sort of demonstrated need that you're not able to do this project on your own. So you're not able to provide financing for yourself for this project. And then in exchange, the big kind of concession or the piece that we got out of this is that you're provided $125,000 to build the unit, and then in exchange, you keep the unit at an affordable rate for a minimum of 10 years. And how we're defining affordable now is 30% of a homeowner's income if they make 80% of AMI or less, or fair market rent, whichever is lower. In this case right now, fair market rent is a lot lower than AMI, and so we're probably going to fix most of them on fair market rents.
So I'd just like to add that this is not in the state program. The affordable rent is not in the state program. This is something that working with the planning department and RUPCO and thinking about where we are on an affordability scale, the state program was designed to essentially provide low-income homeowners an opportunity for cash to stay in their homes. We expanded that and said, if we're going to do this, then we want to make sure that the accessory dwelling unit is affordable as well. And so that the additions here, particularly with the 80% AMI, came out in terms of the planning staff essentially having a discussion with the state and said, can we do this? They said yes. In addition, and I think that when we were doing this, I had some conversations with the chair and some conversations with ourselves and said, it doesn't make a lot of sense to have an 80% AMI when market rates are actually less than that. And so we added into that 80% AMI and or market rate, which is ever lower. And I think that was an important addition, and it's playing out now because of the changes in AMI. But I think it's important for this committee to know that that was not part of the state program. It was an add-on from the planning department working with RUPCO and our partners to say that we wanted to make sure that rent was affordable as well as the income of the homeowner.
I think we're the only ones who implemented that. So essentially, anyone is, you're allowed to charge whatever rent you want because you're given the grant, except for.
Do you want to take questions?
I have a question.
Well, hold on. I'm asking him how we want to do it. Do you
I got one or two more slides here.
What we're going to do is we're going to let them get through this, then we'll do all the questions for this, and then we'll go into the next thing.
So 10 years of affordability, or you are able to house a family member as well. So there's not a requirement that you have to rent it. We're hoping that most folks do because we don't have enough affordable rentals in the county. And then the last one is it can't be used as a short-term rental. It has to be used as a long-term rental if you are going to rent it. So for round one, anyone in the county could apply, any municipality could apply. What we found is actually that depending on the jurisdiction of the municipality, ADUs weren't received as well, or they were just kind of not familiar with it. And so for round two, the state required us to go out and ask for letters of support and participation from specific municipalities that we saw interest in round one, have ADU-friendly regulations so that they can move through the process pretty quickly, and a couple other requirements. But essentially, this is the list of participating municipalities for round two. So your property has to be in one of these eight municipalities to qualify for the program. We saw a lot of interest from these folks so that we know we're going to get applications for round two. And then the other piece of this is that all of these municipalities have municipal water and sewer, which will bring down the cost of building the unit somewhere between $10,000 to $20,000. So really, if you're doing it outside of that, municipal water and sewer, you're going to have to expand your septic system if you can get approval, or you're going to have to build a new septic system, which costs, it would basically push up over the grant amount. So that is, it's a little unfair, but we are trying to build more units in existing hamlets and municipalities that have water and sewer. This is how we're scoring them. Shovel-ready projects, we really want to get folks who have already been thinking about this and maybe already have designs prioritized for projects and awards. If you are willing to increase your affordability to 60% AMI for renters, we're also going to prioritize those applications, access to water and sewer, as I mentioned, proximity to public transit, you'll get points, and then we have like a project narrative where you can kind of demonstrate what your need is and what you're planning to do with the project. Applications are opening September 17th, so very soon. There are press releases going out today or tomorrow. Applications close November 18th. Priority applications are due October 14th for shovel-ready projects. So what we found in round one is, you know, there is a lot of need out there, but there isn't necessarily a lot of motivated homeowners. Like, they want an ADU, but they're not really willing to put in the work to figure out how to build it. So we put in this priority application window to basically say, like, if you are ready, if you are motivated, we want to prioritize your application, because we also get pressure from the state to move these projects along as well. Once you are selected, we'll give you more resources for planning your ADU, budgeting, what's your payback. You will likely need gap financing. So trying to connect you with other sources of financing, and then pair you with someone from RUPCO for construction management once the project is permitted. I don't think I mentioned this, but RUPCO is our partner for this program, so we are partnering with them for receiving the applications. We have a selection committee for the county that will choose the winners, but then they will kind of take over the project once we put them. And I think that is it. Yeah.
Great. So I've got Legislator Collins, followed by Vice Chair Lopez, and then Legislator Kitchen, and then McCullough. So everybody, almost everybody.
My questions are, do you know off the top of your head, 30% of 80% AMI and 30% of 60% AMI, do you know what those numbers are?
We could certainly get them to you.
Yeah,
just look. We have some of the numbers as it relates to what the income is, but I don't know how it translates into rent. Do you have the rent numbers?
Yeah, so So fair market and 60% AMI are essentially the same right now.
Okay, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah, so it depends on the unit size.
Right.
But it's I think it's 1,100 for a studio,
okay.
1,200 for a one bedroom, 1,314 for a two bedroom.
Okay.
Which is high, but if you look at the market right now for market rate units, you know, we're seeing 1,700 to 2,100 for a studio to a one bedrooms.
One more question too. The municipalities that you listed, are all of those municipalities allow ADUs by right? Is that why they were picked, or is it more complicated than that?
Not by right. By right. Permit, by right. So it's about half an hour.
When you say permit, what do you mean?
Special use permit.
By right is no permit at all, just building department.
Yeah.
It's technical review versus a discretionary review from the planning board.
Right. So you don't have to go to a planning board.
Straight to the building department with your plans.
Yeah. As long as you meet all the setback and everything. And we are definitely, through the Housing for Communities program, trying to push more municipalities to do by right.
Legislator Lopez, yeah?
Yeah, my question was asked and answered. I appreciate that.
Legislator Kitchen.
So you were talking about fair market rents.
And
my question was, you know, there's been a lot of talk in the newspaper in the last week about the federal HUD guidelines and what they consider affordable. So could you just explain to me?
Sure. Yeah.
That scenario.
It's a little complex, but yeah, so basically HUD takes census data and finds out what the area median income is for the Kingston Metropolitan Statistical Area, which is actually all of Ulster County.
The figures in the paper were a lot higher than the figures you're saying.
Yeah.
I just wanted to know if you could explain that.
Yeah, so basically what happened is like area median income is your median income of a family, and median income in Ulster County has risen 40% in the past 4 years. We all know, you know, post-pandemic, during the pandemic, we've got new residents in the county, usually with higher income, so that's driven the median up. And so basically, it accounts for households and renters. And so when you actually say, well, 80% of AMI is a low-income households, when you calculate what the rent is for that, it's actually the median income has increased so much that that rent is actually higher than what the market on the in the regular market out there, if you're going to go find an apartment, would be. So fair market is based on what it takes a sample of what the actual rents are that we're seeing out in the community.
Before, to see if Kingston one bedrooms are going for like $1,800.
Right. So
it's all of the housing units that constitute a fair market rent. So it's not necessarily new housing units. It's all of the housing units, and eventually, fair market rent will catch up, and it'll continue to increase as the polling goes. Think of this almost like an appraisal process or a taxing process where every year, you know, there's some reassessments. HUD reassesses every year, and it's been going up every year. It'll probably go up, fair market rent will probably go up more as landlords look at what others are getting, and they'll start looking at rents, which is why you're starting to see a push towards rent stabilization or something of that nature.
Fair market rent is also the metric used for Section 8 for housing choice vouchers,
right?
And so by kind of meeting it with these new units, it also provides the ability for potentially someone to provide.
Well, if you look at what ROCO is paying for these 2 and 3 bedroom units, it's considerably higher than the figures that you're.
So they use fair market rent. So if you are going to take a housing choice voucher for someone in your unit, you're getting paid fair market rent.
Right.
So, and fair market rent for a studio is like $1,100. So we're basically trying to align it with what housing choice vouchers do and then what is actually out there in the market.
Right, because the county executive said this isn't really affordable.
Yeah, yeah, and we agree. And a lot of it, the other thing is AMI used to be a good metric, but now with the shifts in demographics of the county, it's no longer a good metric to use. Yes.
It's by definition from HUD. They define it as affordable. And 60% is also in that definition. Certain geographic areas, it becomes less affordable, even though by definition it's considered affordable.
Legislator McCullough?
I heard you mention additional financing. Is that for the recipients of round one that may have used up to $125,000?
It's for both. You know, we're seeing, so once you get the grant, mm-hmm. we can help them figure out what the best design is, but we are really pushing them for an economic design that doesn't have a lot of frills, because what we're seeing is the costs coming in somewhere between $110,000 to $180,000, which is crazy, and that's just part of what construction costs now. So if there is a gap, we need to help them go out and find other sources of financing. Fortunately, though, you're getting a huge cut off of what you would otherwise have to go out and get for a loan. So the payback period is, you know, somewhere between 5 and 6 or 7 years. Meaning, like, even if you did have to take out $30,000, you've got this steady income mm-hmm. where you can pay off your loan, and there is still some revenue for the home.
And the difficulty, if you think about this, remember we started by saying this is geared to low and moderate income homeowners. So for them to go to the bank and ask for money creates some difficulties depending upon what their current financial situation is. So the conversation then comes back is, can we provide gap financing during that period, or can we convince the bank that this is not a risk?
Go ahead. The $125,000,
mm-hmm.
once awarded, is that money 100% given, or are there steps to?
So it's actually the homeowner actually never receives the money.
Okay.
It goes directly from, once the project is designed and permitted, it goes directly from RUCCO to the contractors.
Okay.
So they get it built. And it's less mess for the homeowner. They don't have to deal with paying their contractors, but we also know that there's a guarantee that the project's going to get built.
The problem that we've had, which we've solved, we think, is that the cost of money has gone up. So what used to be would be a straight reimbursement program. You pay them, we pay you.
Mm-hmm.
From the contractor's perspective, is now being run on something called a cost incurred basis, which essentially says, if presented to an invoice, which is a cost incurred by the agency that's running this, we'll pay you based on costs incurred, then you can pay the contractor and provide us with the proof that you paid the contractor. I would say this, Ulster County is not in this financial mess or financial mix, right? We have basically moved away from our contract, and RUPCO is dealing directly with the state on these payments.
One less hand to pass the money through.
Thank you. Legislator Herman?
So I'm curious about whether or not it is only families, households that can apply for this. Is there a mechanism by which, like, nonprofits could apply for this?
No.
No? Okay.
Because of the way the program is structured, you have to be a low and moderate income homeowner.
Okay.
So they could apply on behalf of the homeowner. There's nothing to prevent that, but the contract would be between the homeowner and the state or the agency,
yeah.
And the eligibility would be determined in that way.
I'm just thinking about organizations that don't necessarily have the money to do this, but may have the space to do it.
Hmm. Yeah, it's a residential. Remember one of the things that he said, you have to be a primary residence.
That's why I'm asking.
So you need to be a primary resident.
Okay.
But there are other state programs out there
that are for
rental units, you know, for non-primary residents. But this is like, it's a pilot program to see if families can build units.
Great.
Thank you. I'd like to move into the next one. So the next presentation is about the first resolution. So you can think of this as us going into resolutions. We're going to finish that presentation. We'll take questions, and then we'll immediately go into the resolution about it. All right?
Okay. Bear with us here. I'll try to move quickly. We can go back to the details of each of the projects. But as I hope everyone is familiar with, the county now has a housing action fund seeded with $15 million for it's essentially a housing trust fund to provide grants to build affordable emergency housing, affordable rental housing, affordable home ownership, lots of different categories. There's a couple requirements to receive the funding. You can't, if you have a mandate, inclusionary zoning of 10% of your units, you can't use this money to build those units. You need to go above and beyond what is required by law by the local municipality. You have to meet New York State home community renewal sustainability guidelines, all electric projects, solar ready, some climate resilient pieces as well, which interestingly enough, that's basically where the market is moving anyway. It a lot of times it actually is cheaper to put in all electric than it is to build fossil fuel heating rather. So that's another one. We're prioritizing projects in housing smart communities, which there are 12 of, and you can't receive funding if the county has already given you funding for your projects. This is the exchange, similar to the ADU program, but it's at a bigger scale. So we give you grants of up to $500,000, depending on the type of project it is. We receive affordable units for 50 years for all projects. We also encourage folks to work with community land trust or another tool for permanent affordability. 50 years is the minimum, but we really want to see affordable units forever so that they don't get flipped. So once we give you the money, there'll be some monitoring and guidelines that the developers have to adhere to make sure that they are affordable. This is the process that we went through this past, May, April was when we opened the NOFA, Notice of Funding Availability. That's the grant application process. We received applications. We have a housing policy and oversight committee of housing experts that review and score the applications. They made recommendations to the county executive, and now the county executive is making those recommendations to this committee and to the full legislature for approval. If the legislature approves the awards, so we go into contract and then release the funds, and then once the project is built, we go to long-term monitoring.
I want to add one step. These projects, this money is essentially being allocated to a fund in your resolution. So there's another step in here that we didn't put up because we sort of ran out of. But the other step is those contracts will be over $50,000 and come back to the legislature for final approval. So you'll see the individual projects will be coming back. What you're doing now is essentially moving money from an assigned fund balance, which you've created, to another portion of the budget so that the money is allocated.
Just as a note here, contract and release of funding only happens when a project has a building permit. And so we have a guarantee that the project is actually getting built. So we're not giving money for a hypothetical project. So I'm just going to run through very quickly the five projects that are being recommended for funding. The first is Harmony Hall by Affordable Housing Solutions. This project takes place just outside of the village in the town of New Paltz. Here's the SUNY New Paltz campus right here. This is where the project location is, just for some context. 51 units of permanently affordable senior housing with 8 units. This is the AMI levels here, so 60% AMI, 50% AMI, 30% AMI. 8 units being designated for residents with physical disabilities. The recommendation is for $300,000. Ignore this part of it. They met their cap of $300,000. The total project cost is $19 million. So we're giving a little bit, but we're getting a lot in exchange, I think. These are some of the other financing sources that they're using. The project is almost ready to go. So this is really nice. We get to pass, assuming the county legislature approves it, pass along the money, and then the project gets built in a couple of years. End date of 2026 for full occupancy. So that's pretty nice. These are just kind of these different categories that I'm highlighting here are what the Housing Policy and Oversight Committee was looking at when they review the application. So it's, you know, do you have other funding sources available? Are you ready to build the project? Do you have experience building affordable housing projects before, which they do? What's the design look like? Do you meet the sustainability guidelines, which they do? And then do you have someone in place for long-term monitoring and affordability? And so I'm not going to run through all of these details here, but essentially this is a very experienced affordable housing developer, a local developer, and a pretty exciting project. The next project is Quality Inn Conversion Project. I'm sure everyone's heard about this one. This is a co-project. This is, help me out, Dennis.
Kingston, right?
Yeah, this is Kingston. We're in 28. That's Ulster, technically.
Town of Ulster.
Yeah, town of Ulster. That's the throughway right there. Everyone knows where that is. That's a traffic circle.
Water roundabout.
Roundabout. Excuse me. Former Quality Inn being converted into 83 permanently affordable and supportive housing units. So there's, and then there's a supportive services, community room. And then the target population here is homeless individuals or families with unmet housing needs and incomes at 30% to 65% of AMI. So there's it's focused on taking those folks who are in motels right now or are unhoused and putting them into permanent.
Is this project on schedule?
That's a good and complicated question. From what we know now, the funding gap has been closed, partly, well, potentially due to our support for the project, and so they can move into construction.
When do you expect it to start?
That's a good question. I'm not going to give you an unrealistic answer on that, but I can.
The figures up there probably aren't right to timeline.
Right here.
Start date of fall
2024. Oh, fall 2024. You know, I'll follow up with the applicant and let you know.
That is the most needed project right now.
Yeah.
This is the only emergency housing project, supportive housing.
The services and the support that's going to be given to this is really going to.
Yep.
Yep.
Funding. So the request is for $500,000 for emergency and supportive housing, which is the cap. This is what they have committed. This is the total cost of the project, although I think that's a little out of date right now. This is the actual total cost of the project. If anyone tells you it's easy to build emergency and supportive housing, they're lying. You have to go through an application process for each one of these funding sources. And so to cobble together all these 13 different sources takes an enormous amount of work with no guarantee that any of these will, you know, follow through. So a little behind the curtains look at what it actually takes to build an affordable housing project. We all know RUFCO, lots of experience. They've got an architect on board and they've got a contractor for construction already lined up.
Zoning is approved.
They have everyone in place for operations. RUFCO will utilize referrals from DSS, emergency shelters, and a number of other sources for the units. Meeting sustainability guidelines, which is amazing, and it's a nice design as well. Okay, moving on. Third Avenue Housing Development, Kingston City Land Bank. So this is in the Avenues. This is 9W.
McCarty's Restaurant.
Yep. There you go. So it's a vacant site plus an old restaurant. The site plan is not approved or finalized, so we're not releasing that, but they have site control. Kingston City Land Bank has site control of all the parcels that would be used for the project. Approximately 46 units of residential for home ownership as well as for rental. Target population housing, households seeking affordable housing, particularly first-time homebuyers at 80% below AMI. This one is at the beginning stages. We, with the legislators' approval, would be first in, which would be a huge commitment and a show of solidarity to the Kingston City Land Bank to approve this project. Part of the reason the Housing Trust Fund was set up is because when a developer is going out for other sources of funding, showing local support goes a very, very long way. So it makes the land bank a lot more competitive when they go out to the state or someone else for funding. Estimated project cost of $19 million. This is their capital stack, as we call it. And again, lots of different grants, applications. It's essentially impossible to build home ownership units at 80% AMI. So you need subsidy, and they're going out, they're essentially timing this grant with a lot of their grants that they're starting to apply for now. They've got experience. They've built and sold rehabbed and sold nine homes so far to 80% or below area median income, lots of staff experience. What else? Meeting sustainability guidelines, committed to long-term affordability. I'll take questions on any of these as they go.
This is a really, in my opinion, this is one of the really interesting infill projects where the funding here can act as a catalyst to get other funding sources. And anytime you can do an infill project of the scale that we're talking about here with an, in a city with water and sewer, it's the right thing to do.
Another great part about this is that the City of Kingston passed their form-based code August last year. Thank you. And so this project, or at the scale that it is being proposed, would likely not be possible. And so this is kind of the new zoning code in action for a project, which is exciting. Dallas Hills Manufactured Home Park, Hurley, New York. This is the location. That's 209. That's Hurley Mountain Road here. It's up on this ridge right here. This is an existing manufactured home park. This is being proposed also by Affordable Housing Conservancy for not as part of this grant, but they're proposing to purchase both manufactured home sites, and what they are asking for money for is 8 affordable home ownership units for manufactured units. So they've got pads in the mobile home park that are empty, and they would purchase them and then sell them to low-income homeowners.
Mobile home park that has about 27 sites that have been pre-approved but not developed. It needs infrastructure improvements. Water and sewer systems are in difficult shape. But this will allow them to make sure that they have at least 8 of those pad sites being able to be rent at an affordable level. We had a number of questions relative to this. It had to do with making sure how we calculated affordability here. That had adequate answers when the committee met.
This is their capital stack right now. They're working with the state for other sources of funding. That's manufactured mobile home affordability program. So that is where the majority of the loan would come for the units. If there are any questions about this, but
So this project is actually in the town of Ulster.
It's correct.
It's early address.
along with the other ones.
I think it's actually
a pilot program as far as the taxes. How's this going to work with the town and the town?
I'm pretty sure this is in the town of Hurley.
I think that there's two mobile home parks. One is Ulster, one is town of Hurley.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
There's the line splits, believe it or not.
Yeah. Good catch, though.
Oh.
We did not hear anything in the application about a pilot for the project.
Like, will the town be getting paid?
So the
taxes on this?
The short answer is that in order to be eligible for a pilot, they would have to have at least 20% of their, I mean, they could apply for a pilot, but I don't know what they would apply for.
Right. So what I'm saying is, will the town be getting paid regular taxes here for these properties?
Well, think of it this way. It's a mobile home park, so it's a commercial entity. So it's taxed as a commercial entity, not as individual homes.
Okay. Gotcha.
But yeah, receiving property taxes in the same way that any other project would be. That's the capital stack committed to long-term affordability, and they have proposed, but not fully committed to the idea of a co-op model. So ownership by the residents of the home, of the mobile home park, rather than owned by an entity. So we'd love for them to do that if they can pull it off. And they're meeting all the other requirements. Again, experienced affordable housing developers. This is the last one. Jeffrey Court, this is in the town of Saugerties, Ulster Habitat for Humanity project. This is the site plan. This is 9W, off of 9W, Falling Waters, Hudson River over here. Can imagine where all of this is. Village of Saugerties is up here. This is 10 permanent owner-occupied affordable homes on Jeffrey Court. The target population is first-time home buyers earning 80% or less of their income. Interestingly, for Habitat, if anyone knows the model, there's a certain number of hours where the homeowner has to provide in terms of sweat equity into the home to qualify. So they do these work parties. They get to know the homes. They're just waiting for state approval for the stormwater permit, and they've got all the local approvals. Approximately 30 months to completion, so they're almost ready to go for construction.
The interesting thing here is we're funding under the NOFA, we were allowed to fund affordable housing infrastructure. And you look at this application, it's about $300,000 of the application was going towards infrastructure work in order to make the site ready, which is a good mix. So if you think about where we are, we have one supportive housing project, one infrastructure project, one mobile home project, and one LIHTC project, low income housing tax credit project. So there has been a good mix in the applications.
This is their capital stack. AHOP, that first one, is another state program, Affordable Housing Opportunities Program. Experienced developer. They know what they're doing in terms of operations for sale of the units. These are going to be all electric homes, meet the sustainability guidelines. So that is the proposed five projects for a total of $2 million, which is in line with the resolution for committee. Great. Thanks.
So why don't we do this? Let's move into discussion on the resolution. We'll do questions as part of the discussion, but I won't ask for a motion right now. I'm just going to call the title of the resolution. And that'll be our start of the resolution. So on resolution 475, authorizing the release of $2 million from the Ulster County Housing Action Fund to provide funding to five housing projects as part of the Housing Action Fund's annual notice of funding availability. And we just saw a presentation, and I will open the floor to questions from legislators. I saw Legislator Collins' hand, then McCullough after.
This is not about the resolution, so I'll defer the question.
Great. Legislator McCullough.
It's five projects. When is the next round come out, can these same five apply again?
No.
Okay.
No.
Thank you.
We want more projects.
Okay, good.
Any other questions?
But it does raise the question that when we originally posed the Housing Action Fund, there was a in-depth discussion with the legislature about the funding that was going to be released on an annualized basis. We did indicate to the legislature, and the legislature indicated back to us that about $3 million a year would be made available. Since that time, you've also committed additional funds with respect to your increase in tourism and lodging tax. So what we're thinking about doing, since there's only $2 million here that we're, depending upon what happens tonight or at the legislative meeting, we're thinking that it's prudent for us to consider another slightly different round. We've learned something with this round, slightly different round, to open it up for that remaining $1 million that's there, with the idea that we'll open up a complete new NOFA sometime in the summer of next year. Then we'll go through this process again in the summer, but the idea would be essentially to, we know that some projects have matured since the application process closed, and we certainly want to give those folks an opportunity to apply and the legislature an opportunity to consider funding.
Legislator Collins.
So now my question is relevant because it was addressed. One was the gap between the $3 million, which has been allocated yearly, and the $2 million, which has already been hopefully being committed. And I wasn't here, obviously, when the resolution was passed that limited the suggested 20% up per year. It seems to me like we're in such desperate need for housing that we should do more than that, if we can do more, if there are projects for that. And I'm wondering if that's something that is, it's not relevant to this particular resolution, but it came up as a topic. So I'm wondering what the thoughts are on that from the executive team and us.
So one of the things I think we can say is that we won't know the answer to that question until we indicate that there's an opening up of additional applications. And depending upon what we see, we can come to the legislature and back and say, this would spend what we think is the application. Here are the additional stuff that came in that we think are worthy of your consideration. But that the way this is set up, it would come through the executive would make the recommendation on that basis. I don't know. I know one of the things that there's an innovation fund here, that was in the NOFA as well. And I know that, we're thinking we didn't not only thinking about funding things that construction things, but things that are also innovative in some way, shape, or form. And we do have some ideas in the planning department heads and with working with the municipalities that there are other things that may want to look at a little bit more sufficiently. We may have money in the planning department's budget under the housing program from the planning department's budget. We can do some of that work absent using this assigned fund balance. But the short answer to your question is that if we're opening this up and we get applications in and they're more than $1 million and we think they're worthy of consideration, we would come back to the legislature and make those recommendations and have you tell us yes or no.
Just to add one more point, when we were designing the Housing Action Fund, we talked to a couple other municipalities in New York State and other places that have them set up and modeled off of Tompkins County. And they've been running theirs for, I think, close to 15 years now. And, it's a balance between the urgency and also providing a sustained source of funding over the long term. The thing that they said was, don't spend it down so quickly that in 10 years, the development community doesn't have this kind of reliable source of commitment from the county.
We would want to make sure that we're recommending, and I know the executive would want to make sure that she's recommending solid projects that have an opportunity to move forward. So depending upon what we see, we would either say yes or no on those basis. I'm certainly aware of at least two or three other projects that have matured since that particular point in time.
Right, like is once a year sufficient enough to meet the cycle of how projects mature over time, and maybe it's gone. Maybe we need more.
Any other questions? All right, then I will ask for a resolution to adopt. Ask for a motion to adopt Resolution 475. Moved by Legislator McCullough, second by Legislator Collins. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Thank you guys on both of these presentations.
Thank
we really
you.
Appreciate it. Moving on from there, Resolution 470, and as I say to all department heads, but you're not in all of these meetings, when your resolutions are done, don't feel obligated to stay. So we won't be offended.
Is there any chance you could take the last resolution?
Oh, do you want? Yes, we can do that. Which one is? 441. Are there any objections from the committee if we take the other resolution? Great. So I'm going to take Resolution 441 out of order. Resolution 441, initiating the process to consider a countywide water and sewer assessment. Is the strike through because it's been presented as amended?
You do not need to make any amendments.
Okay, great. Director Doyle, do you want to?
This came from the chair, so I just wanted to be interested if it's going to pass or not, if you have any significant questions that perhaps I could help you answer.
I've spoken with the chair about this. I can't speak to it in depth on my own, though. And do we have,
go ahead, Dennis.
Dennis, if you can give us some information about this, that would be helpful.
A couple of things. If I could do anything, what I would say is that I got asked, we got asked, the planning department got asked a question from the chair in terms of what we think about the idea of doing additional work to understand our water and sewer infrastructure. Planners love additional work that leads to understandings and looking at this. And so the original resolution was sort of addressed as a feasibility study. That's somewhat concerning to us. Mainly because it suggests the county is going to assume a role with respect to water and sewer. That's something we didn't think we wanted to go to until we saw what the problems were or weren't. So we asked for it to move to an assessment process. And I want you to think about what ended up happening here relative to the housing work that we're doing. The housing work started by essentially looking at all of the things housing and doing an assessment of that and looking at where and what the county could do or others could do with respect to that. And I think that's where we are here. I'm a little concerned about the depth, and as we go through the RFP process, which is in the resolution, a little concerned about the breadth of the assessment that we're undertaking. We think that we need to map the districts so that we understand where they are. Believe it or not, we can map where Salamanders Cross Road, but we can't map where sewer districts are in the county. We think we need to understand where those districts are in terms of any of their permits and their discharges and what their limitations are. We think we need to understand where they are in terms of improvements. This legislature took a lot of money relative to the ARPA funds and invested it in communities, and we need to understand whether that was enough or not enough. I can tell you that in general, the infrastructure needs for water and sewer will well outstrip any of the funding that you currently have in your capital program. So the thought being is we can actually go through that effort and come back and say this is what we found. It also gives us an opportunity to look at how that relates to housing, where we can build housing, and where we have the capacity to build housing, and where development can take place. So that's the genesis behind some of the conversations that we've had via email with the chair, some of the concerns we've had relative to where the resolution was versus where it is. I have a concern where we are right now, given the resolution, is the ability to get an RFP out, review an RFP, issue an award for an RFP, and provide a budget number by the budget year, which we're going to have a draft budget out from the executive October 1. So we're dealing with essentially a legislature in December, and I want you to think about the time it takes to review an RFP, actually to write it, to get it out, to review it, and then think about what we're going to do for a contract with respect to funding. So I just want to caution everyone that's an accelerated process in order to get to a budget number. And I don't think, depending upon the breadth of this resolution and what the RFP is, I don't think it's a small number. I think we can do small numbers relative to mapping. I think we can do small numbers with respect to reporting back on conditions. But as we move into this, the more we get concerned about it, I think that's a real issue. The other thing, and I would say to you, and I would say this as it relates to the ARPA funds, and we made that point with respect to the ARPA committee, is the focus here is on municipal systems, particularly with respect to water. And the thing that you also need to be concerned about is we have a number of small water systems that have a limited number of customers that we're seeing increasingly difficulty for those to continue to make improvements and to continue to move them through. If we're going to do an assessment, some of those systems may be the most at risk, and you'll recall that the county executive working with the Public Service Commission raised this issue with respect to some of our water systems that are managed at the private sector level. Doesn't mean that we need to do something about it, but we certainly need to understand the problem. But if these people need water, we're going to have to find a way to make sure that they can get it. Same thing with respect to small package sewage treatment plants. The small package sewage treatment plants are also a problem because of what's happened as it relates to what the cost to build the original plant versus the cost to build the replacement plant and the amount of capital that can be drawn out of some of these small districts. The state moved to change that process, to which requires now, if you're going to have a sewage treatment plant that's going to serve a small area, that the town has to create a what they call a sewage treatment plant works. And that essentially basically says if the plant fails, the town has to take it over. Some of the older plants in this county don't have that particular sewage treatment plant works requirement. So they're really at risk if there's a problem with respect to that. We think the resolution is appropriate. It's just there's some things that we need to be concerned about as we look towards implementation. And I just want to caution everybody that this is an assessment, not a feasibility study.
Yep, Legislator Collins.
A lot of things. I agree. I think that if we try to do this at this time of year, it may not be effective. I think that maybe we want to limit what we're trying to do to perhaps just mapping this year, something that is more feasible, simpler to do. And mapping not just the municipal but also the private, making sure the private's part of it. I have part of my district has a lot of private wells, private commercial wells, which are failing. I think that's the one that was being taken over, trying to be taken over by the county. And I like to see this. I like to understand where the sewer districts are. I like to see what they actually provide, because some of them are different. Woodstocks is a weird sewer district. It's not really a sewer district. But no one knows that. And understanding what those limitations are for those kinds of systems and what they can do is really important for us all to understand. How it affects housing is really important to understand too. I don't know, given what Planning Director Doyle has just said, that we can get this in this year's budget in a way that makes sense. So I don't know what the step is to make it make sense and do a complete job.
Director Doyle, the resolution itself is very broad in terms of what it doesn't define what an assessment is. So my read on it is that if we put this in the hands of the planning department, they can somewhat define if they want it to just be mapping. And, you know, the resolved at the end, basically says, figure out how to me, I'm reading this, and this, you know, they'll go back to the recording later for the legislative intent, because this is my paraphrasing, but I'm reading this as, I understand it to mean that they're going to figure out what they need to do to make it feasible, and that might mean limiting it to mapping. So I trust their, or whatever the judgment ends up being. So if there's a path forward, I would like to see this take a path forward, even if it's a limited assessment. Yep. Yeah, Director Doyle.
I would agree with both statements here. I think what I'm trying to do is manage expectations, if I can be so blunt, to say that. But to say not to do this, I think is the wrong way to go. And I think the county executive has expressed her support And the county executive staff is expecting their support. We're essentially trying to understand our water and sewer infrastructure better so that we can craft programs and influence state and federal legislation in terms of what's needed. There are a number of programs out there that they're not adequately funded. And we need to understand that. And we can pull a lot of that information from existing plans and processes. These are ongoing engineering work. Every community that has these usually has an engineer that's doing the work on it. And we can also start to influence how these things are approved. I'm taking too much time, but the short answer is that I would not want to see the resolution postponed or changed. It's just I want to manage the expectations about what we could accomplish over a period of time. And what happens with respect to this is that community development block grant funds have been used extremely effectively in the town of Ulster to expand water and sewer systems. Community development block grant funds have been used in the town of in the village of New Paltz to do what they call I&I work. Community development block grant funds are out there as well that are used in other communities as well. And those are the kinds of things that if you can make those things known and they're part of an effort, then you're starting to make communities eligible for additional funding and to think about how funding works on these. So thank you for those. Thank you for the time.
Any other questions? Legislative cost, does that address your concerns?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, great.
I would just like to reiterate what Dennis had said. You know, those block grants that we received in the town of Ulster over the years, we brought water and sewer to many parts of our town that never had it before. Mm-hmm. Just in the last 10 years. And I think that the way things are going with wells are drying up, contamination and this and that, we have to start looking forward to the future. Absolutely.
Well, that might be a good closing note on this resolution. I'll ask for a motion to adopt this resolution 441. Moved by Legislator McCullough, seconded by Legislator Kitchen. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So now we're going to go back into the ordering. Resolution 474, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute a grant application with required assurances to the New York Connects program with the New York State Office for the Aging through our Office for the Aging. And Dr. Copenhaver, do you want to give us a quick overview?
Next is our information and assistance program that we have 2.5 staff supported by the grant. And part of the funding for the commission in Ellenville when it's filled will be by that as well to help people down there. So it's a really wonderful program to help people figure out what they need and where to get it. And we get it every year. And it's unique to New York. So keep it going. This is just a vote to get the grant going. Thanks.
It's really
funny. How much is the grant?
$271,000.
$283,000.
Yep.
Yeah.
Questions?
And where are you located? Here in Kingston, right?
Yeah, right at the DSS building or part of that building. I welcome you all to come and see our senior hub. Ask any questions, please, anytime.
Thank you. Any other questions? All right, then I will entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 474. Moved by Legislator Harmon, seconded by Legislator McCullough. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Resolution 430, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an intermunicipal agreement with the town of New Paltz for services of domestic violence. As I'm reading this, I'm remembering this is the one that's being withdrawn. So I'm not going to keep reading this. I'm the sponsor. I'm withdrawing this. We don't need to continue it. It sounds like this is not going to be able to advance. This is one that had been postponed last month.
Yeah, and I did spend some time investigating. And yeah. It's not the capacity isn't there.
Yeah. So we're just going to move on. But Resolution 430 is withdrawn. Resolution 467, amending the 2024 Ulster County budget to accept allocation of rental assistance program funds from the New York State Office for Temporary and Disability Assistance through the Department of Social Services. And Commissioner Iposi, you just want to give us a very brief background on the OTDOT program here?
Sure. It's funding from OTDA for just under $500,000. This is the third consecutive year that this allocation is being made available. The funds are used to support prevention of homelessness, and we have our service provider, Catholic Charities, who processes applications from persons that are living in the county who are struggling to meet their rental obligations. So it's a very important program and a really needed allocation. The last round of this funding, and it goes on the state's fiscal year, so it's basically an April 1st to March 31st allocation. We were able to service 30 households, and those 30 households had an average rent obligation of about $1,400. And through this program, they were able to receive assistance of an average of about $975 per month for a period covering up to 15 months.
Yep.
It can cover 3 months of arrears and 12 months of future rent. So out of that allocation, about $375,000 went directly to cover the rental expenses that were being incurred. So we're glad that this allocation is being made available again. And we would continue to have Catholic Charities as our provider to administer it.
Great, thank you. Yep. Legislator Kitchen and then McCullough.
Yes. So I would just like to say, as far as Catholic Charities goes, they do not just hand out money. They are very thorough when they go and interview people and look at their income and what they're bringing in. I deal in the property management business. I deal with tenants sometimes have a hard time paying their rents. And they'll really scrutinize people before they give them the money. This isn't just money that's just given out to anybody. And it really goes to the people that actually need it. So it's definitely Catholic Charities is definitely doing a great job with being a good steward and taking care of this program.
Legislator McCullough?
How many times can someone qualify for this?
It's an annual application.
Okay.
So they're not prohibited from applying again. And Legislator Kitchen alluded to the fact that there are specific eligibility criteria. So those would have to be reviewed in a subsequent application to make sure that they're meeting all that criteria again. But applicants can reapply.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions? And then I'll entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 476.
So moved.
Yeah, moved by Kitchen, seconded by McCullough. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Resolution 477, approving the execution of a contract for $2,353,459 entered into by the county with Segunda Iglesia La Misión through the Department of Social Services. And Commissioner Iposi, do you want to give us a quick background? This is it's a switch of the vendor, but it's the same facility. Is that right?
Yeah, sure. So I'll take a deep breath here and say that in connection with our ongoing efforts to ensure that as part of our Code Blue programming that we offer a warming center. We had previously had Catholic Charities as our most recent provider, and they were operating a warming center at a Segunda Iglesia on Elmendorf Avenue in Kingston. We were informed by Catholic Charities that they were not going to be available to continue to be the operator. So we put this program out to RFP, and based on the proposals that we received in the RFP process, we received a proposal from Segunda Iglesia Mission, which we did approve, which is reflected in this resolution. Our expectations are that the proposal was extremely comprehensive, and we're confident that it addresses a lot of the unique services that an operator has to be prepared to be able to provide and navigate through. The population of individuals that are served at the warming center present with a lot of unique circumstances, and the fact that the warming center's mission is to accommodate anybody who might present there, and we have a continuous operation model from November 1st through March 31st, means that the operator really has to be prepared to engage every single individual that arrives there, to have enough of a productive conversation, to understand that person's needs, and then to make appropriate referrals. So we feel like we have a provider that has a very good sense of the kind of services that are going to be provided, already has a lot of relationships with the population. Obviously, Segunda de Iglesia had previously been the owner of the location as a faith-based organization. So they're definitely bringing a lot of experience, a lot of insight, and the plan that they, you know, had proposed, we're very confident that we're going to be able to continue to successfully operate a warming center.
Great. Legislator McCullough, and then Kitchen.
Two quick questions. I'm going to say more. Are there any plans to maybe adjust for the summer months where it's extremely hot to have that same space as a cooling fit?
Not as part of this resolution. On occasion, we have operated a cooling center based on arrangements that were made with a prior operator who continued to lease that space. And they did present with having enough capacity to open up during extremely hot temperature periods. There's nothing that's being contemplated as being continually available, but it would probably continue to be available on an as-needed basis.
Yep, go ahead.
Does any of this funding go towards meals?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep, exactly. It includes the provision of meals for guests that are accommodated there.
Yeah, and that is in the Schedule A that I have
printed. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Well, just in your kitchen?
Yeah, so are you dealing with an individual or a board of directors or someone that's accountable? One individual? I'm dealing with a group of people. The RFP went out, right? You accepted an RFP. They presented you with a budget. Are you dealing with just the church? Is the church just a facility?
We're dealing with the church leadership. The church is the applicant.
Okay.
So they're the provider.
Okay.
They'll be the entity that we go into contract with.
Okay.
And they'll be the entity that has responsibility and accountability for providing the services. So their proposal included staffing. It included security. It included meals. It included collaboration with other providers who will be on site to engage with the guests.
Now, can someone who, a homeless person who needs to go here, how long can they stay for? Is it just limited to 24 hours? Can they stay for a week? I mean,
they can stay for as long as ends up being needed. It's basically on a case-by-case basis.
All right.
One of the issues we're going to...
Because winter's a long time.
It is.
Every day is cold.
Yeah, so, that's why we went to the continuous operation model. So the goal is going to be to do more targeted messaging.
This is almost a temporary winter housing.
Well,
it's in some cases.
It's not a permanent emergency shelter, but can an individual experience it that way and essentially arrive at the warming center and have an expectation to continue to remain there? That has been something that has happened in prior years, but that's not necessarily the service that's specifically provided here. It's a warming center, which is meant to be a place for someone to come in and out of the cold,
right,
to be engaged and to learn about what that individual's needs are, to be referred to other services. So we're going to really expend effort on improving the messaging and the engagement to do our best to encourage guests that if they have a ride and are preventing as homeless, to be able to go to other emergency homeless programming. Exactly.
You know how many beds will be here?
We have a capacity there of between 50 to 55 at any given time, and they're cots.
So, and they'll be, of course, staffed 24 hours, right, around the clock.
Around the clock, yeah.
And when they come up with a $2.3 million, they submit like a budget to you, a budget plan of where the costs are going to go?
Part of the RFP included a budget. We normally enter into a contract for a 3-year period.
Understand.
And part of the RFP process relies on what our recent annual allocations for the program has been from OTDA. So that is something that is in line with what prior expenditures have been and what we think it will trend moving forward.
And one last question.
Sure.
This is a county warming center, correct?
Yes.
Does the city of Kingston also operate its own separate warming center?
Not that I'm aware of.
Wow. So, out of the whole county, people have to get on a bus. Let's say they're coming from Ellen or somewhere else or Phoenicia.
Kingston. You know, the Code Blue program was implemented by executive order through the governor. Back in 2017. And part of the Code Blue requirements are that each county provide shelter for people whenever the temperature is 32 degrees or colder. It also calls upon other service providers, including first responders, law enforcement, municipalities, to provide transportation to locations that the county arrives at establishing for Code Blue services. So we've had excellent collaboration and support from law enforcement throughout the entire county over, you know, the nearly 10 years we've been doing this, transporting, you know, individuals to this location. Now, there are times during the winter season that a municipality might open up a warming center on their own. A faith-based organization might open up, their premises.
Understood.
You know, if there's a bad storm forecast. But this is a program that's designed to meet our mandated responsibilities as a county under the Code Blue program.
So I'm going to go to
for the first time and then Mr. McCullough for the second time.
Thank you. I can speak a little bit to the lack of other warming centers because.
Yeah, my concern is that's not a whole lot of beds for a whole county.
So warming centers are harder to open than you think they're going. Like, it seems easy, right? Like, we have heat, open the door, but it's not. So for instance, for a church, if you have other vulnerable populations in the building, then you have to have a safe sanctuary policy so that you know how you're walling off those two areas. Do you have adequate bathrooms? There's not necessarily some place for anybody to stay even for one night. You have staffing issues to do that. So I think there's a tremendous amount of will, but there's a burden of a very high bar of resourcing. It's like, is the building ADA accessible? Because if it's not, that's not really considered shelter.
Right.
So it gets way more complicated than we'd like to think of it as being.
Legislator McCullough?
I was wondering if there's something we could do about the 32-degree. In my opinion, 33 is cold, 34 and 35.
That's it. I can't hear.
This is continuously operating.
We have addressed that. So 32 degrees or colder is the Code Blue requirement. But as a result of what we experienced over several years of operating just based on temperature activations, we switched to a continuous activation model. So beginning November 1st through March 31st, we're open 24 hours a day regardless of the temperature. In October, and in April, we are open based on the temperature. And the likelihood is we may start to get some 32-degree days in October. But, you know, over the course of the years we've been doing this, we haven't seen that happen too frequently, except maybe towards the end of the month. And then we also, you know, get some colder days in April. So that's why we're doing the continuous activation model.
Great. Any other questions?
I'm getting cold talking about it.
Oh, gosh. Don't even.
Cold stuff.
All right. On that note, I will entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 477. Moved by Legislator Harmon, second by Legislator McCullough. All those in favor? Any opposed? All right. Resolution 478, amending the 2024 Ulster County budget to accept additional funding from the New York State Office of Mental Health through the Department of Mental Health. We have this resolution, and then we have the next one. Are they basically the same thing? Yep. So then I'll defer to Commissioner McDonald, but then we'll do the resolutions in rapid succession. So if you have questions about either one, ask them now. Commissioner McDonald?
Sure. We received, and probably will continue to receive throughout the end of the year, amended state aid letters with COLAs for specific programs. So these two were for the Astor clinics, I believe, and for Hudson Valley Reintegration Services, the veteran services. So there's the two resolutions for the COLA, accepting the COLAs, and then the contracts afterwards are the subsequent amended contracts to increase their contract with the COLA amounts.
Any questions from the committee?
No, I think we talked about this last time.
We get these all the time. Yeah, these COLA adjustments. So with that, I'll entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 478. Moved by Legislator Kitchen, seconded by Legislator Lopez. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, we'll go right into Resolution 479, amending the 2024 Ulster County budget to accept additional funding from the New York State Office of Mental Health, the Department of Mental Health. It's the exact same thing, so I'm just going to ask for a motion to adopt. Moved by Legislator McCullough, seconded by Legislator Kitchen. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Great. And then before we move on, Legislator Collins, while you were out of the room, we adopted Resolution 477. You want to record your vote in the affirmative. Very good. Resolution 480, approving the execution of a contract for $679,563 entered into by the county with Children's Home of Poughkeepsie, New York. The Department of Mental Health and Commissioner McDonald, I'll defer to you to give us some background here.
Sure. So we issued an RFP seeking a provider to establish a children's clinic in the county with ARPA funds. The RFP had three responders. We went through the process, chose Children's Home of Poughkeepsie. This contract is a reflection of that RFP. I'll let the Special Projects Director, Jolene Darby, talk a little bit more about what we're expecting from them, but it's certainly a very exciting opportunity for our children.
Okay. Do they have to go to Poughkeepsie for services?
I'm sorry?
They'll go to Poughkeepsie to get services?
No, sorry. So Children's Home of Poughkeepsie applied for the project. We're actually looking at renaming the clinic itself that will be in Kingston so that there is no confusion. But the organization itself is called Children's Home of Poughkeepsie. They applied to provide services in Ulster County. They've been really successful in their work in Poughkeepsie. Do you have any questions?
Where? Will this be okay?
So it's going to be located, there's going to be two locations. One location will be at 368 Broadway Center for Wellbeing. We have a vacant floor there. There's no other tenants on that floor right now. And then we will be conducting a behavioral health needs assessment. Our work starts on September 11th. So we will be doing an assessment over 6 months of high need areas in Ulster County for the second location. So embedded in this contract, it does state that the provider will work with us through this process, the behavioral needs assessment, to determine the second location and work with us. Our goal is to expand services within the first year to include 105 to 110 children. And then over the course, by the end of 2027, we're looking for this provider to serve up to around 240, 250 children.
Any questions from the committee? Legislator Lopez.
Now, is that search For the entire county, or is it?
Yeah, so it's going to be the entire county. It's going to be adult services, youth services, mental health, and substance use service. So it's going to be a very, very complex assessment that will tell us where the gaps are, and it's also going to be really looking into cost savings. You know, the county did provide a lot of the direct services many years ago. Now a lot of our work is contracted through organizations, and really looking at where you can get your bang for the buck and the most impact for the service areas and the gaps that are going to help us assist finding.
Listen, Owens.
And I assume that search is going to take into account the size of the county, locations of the county, and distance, travel distance within the county.
Correct. So it is also going to look at transportation. The goal is to really start off working with the Department of Mental Health, the Community Service Board, and having discussions of what we see as the system of care as it is right now. So we'll then transition into actually interviewing current community providers and also community members. So there will be forums held where adults and youth can come and discuss about services that they're already getting provided and where they feel that there's barriers or issues. And from there, there will be an analysis at the end that will be submitted to the department for review. And it will hopefully guide our, you know, local services plan of, you know, what areas we want to tackle. The other thing about the children's home, you know, their presentation and their RFP response was significantly more expanded than the other responses that we got. You know, they're looking to staff up to at least six clinicians over a two to three year period of time, where a lot of the other responses were looking at a very small satellite with only two clinicians. And so they really strategically put together a budget that will spend the money down through the end of 2026 using ARPA funds and become self-sustaining. So the idea that they have to really kind of go through with us and working with OMH is to show that they will be sustainable through this funding. So that's going to be part of their licensing process, which they've already started.
One of our initiatives in wanting to be able to do the RFP was to open up access and choice for our families. So we looked at it as an opportunity to be able to get a provider that has a very long history steeped in taking care of children and having them come into the community and offer similar services here.
Thank you. Any other questions from anyone?
All right, then I will entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 480. Moved by Legislator Harmon, second by Legislator McCullough. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Resolution 481, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $11,703, causing the aggregate contract plus amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000 entered into by the county with Aster Services for Children and Families through the Department of Mental Health. And Commissioner McDonald?
This is a contract amendment for them to be able to receive the COLA and increase their contract.
Okay. Any questions from the committee? And then I will entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 481. All right, moved by Legislator Harmon, seconded by Legislator McCullough. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Resolution 482, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $4,098, causing the aggregate contract plus amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000 entered into by the county with the Hudson Valley National Center for Veteran Reintegration, Inc., through the Department of Mental Health. And Commissioner McDonald, brief background.
For an amendment, a way to be able to funnel those COLAs to the reintegration.
Any questions from the committee?
I entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 482, moved by Legislator McCullough, seconded by Legislator Kitchen. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Resolution 483, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $1,108, causing the aggregate contract plus amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000, entered into by the county with the Institute for Family Health and the Department of Mental Health. And Commissioner McDonald, is this another, authorizing the COLA?
It is indeed. They are really looking for the sum of $100.
Yes. Well, every bit counts. All right. So then I will entertain a motion to adopt from committee. Moved by Legislator McCullough. Seconded by Legislator Harmon. I will call the question. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. And then Resolution 484, which is our last resolution for tonight, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute a lease agreement with People USA for space at the Crisis Stabilization Center in Kingston to the Department of Public Works, Buildings and Grounds. And I don't know if Commissioner McDonald or Jolene, whoever should.
Yeah, so originally, obviously, when the Port Center idea came about, PeopleUSA was going to become the operator, but at the time for the licensing process, the state hadn't figured out yet what that lease agreement looks like. So if they were getting funded through this through OMH, they would have to have like a 25-year lease. We are funding this project, so we don't need that. So, you know, we've worked through the details with PeopleUSA. They will occupy the space. They will be paying us rent starting in January 2026. This is just to put that in writing. They're going to be responsible for their own cleaning. Obviously, they're a tenant. It's the same formula we use for the other tenants at 368 Broadway with a semi-annual increase over time every year after they start paying us rent in January 2026. The lease is important because to finalize their licensure application needs to be submitted. So right now, OMH just has a template of a standard county lease, but we will need within the next couple of months, probably 4 to 6 weeks, a final version of a lease that we could submit to them. They will then come and do a final walkthrough to provide PeopleUSA with the operating certificate so they can start to provide services once construction is complete. So,
thank you. So I've got Legislator McCullough followed by Legislator Kitchen.
The rent that you collect, is that money going to go back into the program?
So they won't be paying rent for the first year while they're occupying the space, mostly because we are providing them the funding for the startup cost to become sustainable. They will be sustainable within that period of time, and then they will be paying rent back to the county. As far as I understand, there's no plan yet to put it back into the program.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions? Legislator Kitchen, go ahead.
Can you tell me, this is going to be a 368 Broadway, correct?
Correct. That's the first floor that's currently under construction.
First floor. PeopleUSA, who are PeopleUSA?
PeopleUSA is a community provider. They're located in 8 different counties in New York State. They originally started as a peer-run organization providing housing service, recovery-oriented services. They played a big role in creating and operating the Dutchess County Stabilization Center. And they had been awarded the RFP to operate the Crisis Stabilization Center that we'll be in.
Can you tell me what a Crisis Stabilization Center is in more detail? I mean, I haven't just thought in my mind about it, but maybe I'm not right.
Right. So, you know, around the country, there's different types of what you would say is a stabilization center. The one that was created in Dutchess, that was based off of traveling around different states, PeopleUSA team, and coming together with the idea of a hub where people can go in crisis and get services right away and get connected to services in real time within 24
hours. Crisis could mean disasters.
It could mean
homelessness.
It looks different for everyone.
Abuse, victims of domestic abuse.
Enter in and then speak to someone, a social worker. So I'll give you a little. The license right now for Crisis Stabilization Center, there's two. There's a supported and there's an intensive. Ulster County will have an intensive Crisis Stabilization Center. The difference being it will offer medication management there. Someone can stay up to 23 hours and 59 minutes. It's not meant for housing and it's not meant for inpatient treatment. It's meant for anyone to come in crisis and get connected to external providers and services. So that could be mental health, substance use, domestic violence, counseling, ongoing treatment, inpatient, outpatient detox, the whole nine.
I understand. So
the staffing pattern is peer support, social worker, nursing staff, and CASAC, substance use counselor. So they could be assessed by any one of those individuals. And then the idea would be that our community providers would have a quick turnaround, understanding that that person came in crisis. And so a follow-up appointment for them within a very brief period of time would be expected. So the program itself serves adults and youth separated on different sides of the facility. But within 368, you have the opportunity to be able to, in real time, walk to another provider to link them to ongoing care. And that's really the idea around the Center of Well-Being, to reduce the barriers for people to access those services.
Okay. So this would be done by people of USA. They're not like subcontracting it out to anybody else, right? This would be.
So they're going to be the main operator. Some of their social workers will be, and this was really meant for collaboration purposes to kind of integrate other community providers. They will subcontract for some social work positions, and they will be working with a
we just don't know at this point who it would be, but someone's provide telehealth services for medication disbursement. So that might be, you know, WMC or New Advance, but they're working out those contract negotiations to be able to provide that services. But a majority, I would say at least 80% of the staff will be PeopleUSA staff.
Any other questions? Any discussion? All right. Then I will entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 484.
I'll move it.
Moved by Legislator Harmon, seconded by Legislator Collins. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. We have no new business. We have no old business. I will entertain a motion to adjourn. Moved by Legislator Collins. Seconded by Legislator Harmon. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Great. Thanks, everybody.